This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina. I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And this is lucky number three, Zach Valenti, at your service.
And today we have the honor and the pleasure to be joined by a very special guest star
here indeed.
In the No Bad Ideas studio. With us today, coming directly to you, is Jerry J. Smith, writer and director of The Phenomenon.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very, very excited to be here.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
So, Jared, before we get started, do you want to talk a little bit about what your show is? What is The Phenomenon?
Sure. The Phenomenon is an audio drama podcast. So, essentially, it takes place in a world where it kind of takes place in the aftermath of this swarm of flying aliens have engulfed the Earth. And these aliens are deadly to even look at. So if you look out the window and they fly by and you see it, any visual contact, your heart stops, you drop dead, you're gone. So obviously, a large majority of the world dies almost immediately,
right?
Because people can't help, doing what they're told not to do. So if you're told to not look out the window, they immediately look out the window. Yes. And so a lot of the world dies, and that's where we start.
Fun stuff.
Yeah. So it starts right after a massive global apocalypse and follows the survivors that are kind of trying to figure out this new world that they live in, this new world that they exist in, trying to figure out what these creatures are, where they came from, why they're so deadly to look at. And there's people from all over the world. So there's people from here in the States, Russia, Japan. So there's little groups of survivors all over the globe, and we kind of peek into their lives and, just see how they're surviving.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
That sounds dope.
Sounds like a fun family time.
It starts out with most of the globe dead. So that's day one in the world of The Phenomenon. Yeah.
But I love it. It's such a great concept for an audio drama. It's a very good idea.
Sure.
So we will speak of it no more here on this show, because here we are all about the bad ideas, the worst thoughts that humanity has ever had. Every week we take a couple of these and we try to figure out how to turn bad ideas that someone has had into the concept for good stories. Are you guys excited and ready to go into our first story?
Oh my God, not ready. So excited. And for anybody who would like to hear more about The Phenomenon and from Jared, please do tune in on Thursday for our Creative Corner chat.
All righty. Shall we get started?
Yes.
Okay. So idea number one today comes from our friends over at NPR.
Aw, good old NPR.
The headline reads, "At the T-Rex races, mark, get set, rawr." For anybody who would like to read at home, we are going to include links to the articles in the episode description. So, at first glance, the starting gate at Emerald Downs racetrack looks relatively normal.
Oh no, they're actually doing this on a racetrack?
But then, the gates open and the race begins.
Oh, no.
And instead of thoroughbreds, a mass of people bursts forth, running as fast as they can, while wearing oversized T-Rex costumes.
Oh, no.
Quote, "The T-Rexes stand at the ready and T-Rexes away," track announcer Tom Harris yells as prehistoric, though hilarious, chaos breaks out on the track. At the wire, a dino named Regular Unleaded took the victory, holding off Rex's girlfriend by a tail.
Oh, my God.
The sight of fierce
girlfriend.
Yep. The sight of fierce-looking dinosaurs bobbing down a groomed dirt racetrack has quickly become a fan favorite at Emerald Downs, which is owned and operated by the Muckleshoot Tribe in Auburn, Washington. Quote, "The crowd response is the best part of the event," says Cody Bennett, a sales manager at the Tri-Guard Pest Control Company, which holds the race. Quote, "The kids love us and we enjoy taking pictures with them before and after the race. It's always enjoyable to hear the adults making bets with each other on which T-Rex will win." Saturday's race marked the third year in a row that T-Rexes have sprinted at Emerald Downs. After a video of last year's event drew the attention of ESPN and lured more than a million viewers online, officials decided to make the race more formal, using the racetrack's starting gate to ensure a fair and equal start. Mm-hmm. They take this very seriously.
The integrity.
The new sense of propriety was short-lived. After the gate sprang open, two dozen theropods spread across the track in a flopping frenzy, their bodies whipping back and forth as the crowd hollered. Quote, "Look how they run with their heads real high," the track's broadcaster Joe Withy said recently as he previewed the T-Rex race. "That's the style of T-Rexes, I guess. Heads high." The article continues for quite a bit with additional details. I don't think that we need to sort of like go through all of it. I am, however, going to turn my,
oh my
computer this way so
exactly
that everyone in the studio can take
it. The link, they all look the same. You can't tell them apart.
I know. They need like the jockey numbers so that you can.
So, yes, you are encouraged to go to the article, dear listeners, so that you can take a look at just how amazing
a T-Rex
looks.
It looks exactly the way you think it looks.
It's like SantaCon, but on a track, and instead of Santa costumes,
it's T-Rex
inflatable outfits.
All right.
So good.
Let's figure out how to turn this into a good story. 10 minutes on the clock starting now.
So I'm imagining that this company needs to up the ante after a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And in a couple of years, gene drive technology
might be at a point.
Where, so you're saying, what if Jurassic Park, but also Seabiscuit?
Right.
If it's a Seabiscuit type story, but with these people dressed.
I mean, Chris Pratt already has like the ESP with the raptors. So writing a dinosaur, we're really just a step away.
Where is the lie, though? I'm like, this sounds great. Let's go.
I love that it's humans, though, because this just seems like a perfect opportunity because it involves gambling and it involves humans for some kind of gambling cheating scandal.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Right. No, you have a champion who gets in a little too deep and suddenly is called to fix the race.
And this is
will they do it?
And this is like
the people
Rex's
at the casinos
girlfriend doing this.
Yes,
the people at the casinos when they're you know in the hole too much. This is their punishment. So instead of washing dishes, they have to be the people who dress up.
Oh my God.
Wow. That is a cruel and I think worthy punishment.
There's also something, a heartfelt drama in there about, instead of animals, you know, these races traditionally involve animals and they can often be abusive.
Yes.
But, you know, so now to get rid of the animals, we're now just using humans, you know? So it's just like, we're going to do that to ourselves now. So it's a little bit
of karmic
animal
payback,
rights activists, you know, saving these animals, but instead volunteering.
Right. You have sort of a casino operated by a Native American tribe. They need to make money to support themselves. So they're reluctant. And then you have this animal rights group that comes in is like, no. Mm-hmm. Give us the track for 3 days. And if we make double the money that you would make racing greyhounds, you get rid of the greyhounds.
They have to stop
with the animals, but they can't stop with the racing because of money implications. And this is their solution.
Right. Oh my God. That's brilliant.
Peter, call us.
And T-Rexes could just be one of the silly things
that they do. Yeah. What other kind of like... There's three-legged, there's like Dizzy Bat.
Santa for sure.
Santa's for sure.
Yeah.
There's the egg on a spoon. I'm just thinking about random challenges now.
You can do some things where certain people get a head start.
Mm-hmm.
So you're
sort of staggered.
It's all uphill. You know, so just all kinds of different obstacles.
Like the Colosseum, you flood the race trap and then they have to swim.
Right. Like that is where this is going. Right. Like very quickly it is turning into like the Colosseum. Right.
Thunderdome.
Yeah.
Dino Dome.
Well, this is what happens when like it's a runaway success, right? And they feel that they have to one up and top the novelty of it. Instead of leaning in on the T-Rex brand.
They found a good thing with the T-Rex, but they can't stop there.
They can't stop there. They get a little greedy.
Yep.
So, who's our
protagonist?
And also, is this a film? Is this a book? Is this a comic novel?
I'm seeing a movie.
All right.
I'm seeing a movie.
Yeah.
Get greedy.
What's,
Dino
I mean,
racers.
Scorsese made another mom movie. He can make one more.
Yeah. Okay, so, but like now let's move on to your question, Sarah. Like, who is the protagonist? Is it kind of like the rebranding agency that gets brought in after PETA pickets the racetrack for 100 days and they have to kind of.
Or is it the young activist who is like, let me strike a deal with you, shady casino? Or is it, you know, someone at the casino who wants to sort of. You know, Godfather One style, clean up the business.
Right, right.
Yeah, or this casino, you know, in supporting a tribe, you know, it can't go under. It needs this, you know, so they need to think outside the box for their community.
Right.
You know, because their community is depending on a new, fresh
and
idea.
And racetracks are kind of on the decline kind of anyway, except for the Kentucky Derby.
Wait a minute, guys. Alternate pitch.
Okay.
Ocean's 14. They need a way to get into the casino. They need a front in order to get on the premises. Dinosaur costumes.
That's it would be like amazing. Very cosmically satisfying to see George Clooney in a dinosaur costume.
Right. He's getting into like an argument with like Matt Damon. Don't step on my tail. Come on, man. I can barely see where this thing is.
Like at the end of Ocean's 11, when they all meet at the Bellagio.
Oh, yeah.
They could all meet at the start track, all in
That's
their
right.
in their
Claire
dinosaur
Will
outfits,
Perry
looking
as
at each
they,
other
like,
in slow motion.
Slow mo run down the track.
Okay, we should not actually pitch that, but
it was too good a thought. High in the wind.
Okay, let's say that it is the young activist that strikes a deal with the casino and probably ends up having to be around the casino, maybe even gets kind of like absorbed into the infrastructure in some way. They kind of get, they're now the head of, or they're like have a position in the entertainment division, the head of programming for the racetrack or something. Is then the problem that they kind of need to come up with the next event that is going to make more money?
I feel like this is the climax, right? Like, because it's tough to top all of the people running in dinosaur outfits.
Right.
So it feels like that's what it's building to. So.
Right. Maybe there's a bunch of failed experiments.
Sure.
First.
Yeah. But they don't capture the attention of people.
No, they don't go viral, man.
At risk of an alternate pitch.
Sure.
For an alternate pitch. The running of the bulls, definitely illegal and immoral and bad for bulls and bad for people who get gored by bulls.
Mm-hmm.
However, imagine if it involved dinosaurs. And was ethical to animals by actually being humans in costumes. So I guess I'm just wondering if there's like a world where this, and maybe it doesn't have to be a casino. Maybe it's like a hotel. I don't know. Like just the idea of like we need to get tourism up yesterday.
Right.
So what do we do? Well. Maybe we start like promoting the idea that, you know, don't run with the bulls, run with the dinos. And so we're building up to like the day where they run with the dinosaurs and like how far do they take it with like cartoony end being like they literally genetically engineer dinosaurs. But maybe we don't go that way.
I think that in that case, then it needs to be something where. They're far better high-end costumes where they look real, but they're still kind of operated by people and kind of about the tension of what's going to happen when all of these thrill seekers who paid $60,000
right.
to run away from a T-Rex realized that it was actually just Jim, you know, kind of operating the robot T-Rex from, you know, right, inside right, the right, T-Rex right. suit or something.
There is a fantastic viral video of like an animatronic dinosaur. I forget whether it was a raptor. It wasn't a T-Rex.
I've seen this.
But yeah. you've seen this. And so it's the camera is placed so that you see people walking down a street and they start seeing people run away from them.
Around the street
around
corner.
The corner.
Yeah.
yeah. And so they don't know what's around the corner and they keep walking somewhat kinda puzzled.
Like, oh, that's weird. Like, I
Someone's
wonder what's going on.
Late for something, I guess. And then they turn around the corner and see the dinosaur and start running. And it's a very funny video. But in this scenario, it wouldn't necessarily be like a racetrack run. It would kind of be like a stay alive, avoid the dinosaurs in town kind of a thing.
Mm. Like they get like dropped in the middle of the jungle or something.
I mean, jungle.
I'm yeah,
making
no, like...
air quotes with my hands.
Right. Well, these are all sort of interesting possibilities. We have 1 minute and 5 seconds remaining. Okay. So let's maybe sort of decide what is the most promising lead.
Okay, so there's a landmark in the United States that uh-huh. needs to draw more attention to itself. That needs to get tourism up in order to make this work. Let's say it is the national parks because that's just the time we have.
You got it.
And in the national parks, they wire up some very convincing looking robot dinosaurs to chase these tourists. I don't know, a really trolly way to go is somebody gets injured in the first 5 minutes and the rest of the movie is a court case.
I admire the heck out of you for that. I think that's like a 5-panel comic that you've just done, but it's hilarious.
No, I love it. And the trailers, all the footage comes from the first 10 minutes. Right. So it is sold as a like fast-paced survival
Instead
movie.
Of a really, really petty class action lawsuit courtroom movie.
Right, right, right. And there isn't any big like gotcha twist to the court case. It's just kind of a like boring court case
it's
for 90
mostly
minutes.
From the stenographer's point of view. And they're really failing marriage. It's like,
oh my
in
God.
The background. I'm so sorry, you guys.
Sold.
This is like some Secret Life of Walter Mitty bullshit.
Okay. With robot dinosaur suits.
All right, that's time. That's time. All right, great.
Solved it.
I went to a place. I should get less sleep more often.
All right, let's all see if we can get a little less sleep and take a quick break. But we'll be right back for another bad idea.
Hey y'all, breaking into the show for just a moment to let you know about some of the exciting things we do here at No Bad Ideas HQ, one of which is called Audio Fiction 101. What is Audio Fiction 101? I hear you ask, rhetorical listener. Well, I have a non-rhetorical answer for you. Audio Fiction 101 is an online course that the three of us made all about how to tell stories in podcast form. It has all kinds of questions to all kinds of queries you may have asked, like how to write great characters for audio, how to build great audio settings, how much world building do you need to do, what even is revising, and how can I do it? All of these answers are sitting behind a handy dandy paywall that you can go to and unlock by going to audiofiction101.com and unlocking all of the audio drama secrets that we have discovered through making various and sundry shows. We want to give this knowledge away, not for free because late stage capitalism, but for a very small and reasonable fee. Again, if you would like to support our audio fiction endeavors and embark upon your own, head to audiofiction101.com. Okay, back to the show.
Thank you.
And welcome back, everybody, for your second helping of Terrible Idea.
Hooray!
This week, from The Verge, link in the show notes. I hesitate to read the title of this article, but it's a bit of a slow burn. It's a bit of a long read. We're not going to go through the whole thing, okay. And I'm just going to spoil it up front. It is a very bad idea. The Craigslist of guns.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, I don't know what I was expecting.
Inside
but...
Arms List, the online, quote, oh gun show that never ends. Thomas Caldwell was a veteran in his 60s with a soft physique, oval glasses, no income, and a history of mental illness. I've been schizophrenic all my life, hearing voices, he once said in a courtroom. He didn't have a license to sell firearms, but that hadn't stopped him.
Jesus.
In 2015, according to prosecutors, police found a Glock in a Milwaukee drug house and quickly linked it to him. He'd purchased it only the day before. Months later, an agent with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, ATF, confronted Caldwell about the pistol. According to the ATF, he said he had been purchasing guns from a licensed dealer, then reselling many of them through armslist.com, a website that connects sellers with buyers looking for anything from a pistol to an AR-15. If Caldwell wanted to sell guns, the ATF warned him, there was a proper way to do it. Without obtaining a federal firearms license, he was breaking the law and potentially putting weapons into the hands of criminals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Caldwell didn't listen, and he managed to turn flipping guns into a substantial business, prosecutors later said.
Holy Christ.
Between December 2015 and May 2018, he made cash deposits into his bank account, totaling more than $19,000 from all from gun sales.
Whoa.
Even after his initial run-in with authorities, he kept up the practice for years. In 2017, Madison police found a Taurus 9mm pistol during an investigation, then traced it back to a purchase Caldwell had made 2 weeks before. Eventually, the ATF found that 11 guns recovered by police during investigations had been purchased by Caldwell. Since the ATF's 2015 warning, he'd bought 95 handguns and 11 rifles from 57 different sellers.
All of those numbers are too high.
Caldwell posted more than 200 listings for guns on the website, according to prosecutors, sometimes explicitly noting the weapons were brand new and unfired. Officials believed the short, quote, time to crime, the gap between a sale and when it's recovered at a crime scene, meant Caldwell had become a known source for criminals. A prosecutor would later say a tragedy was, quote, inevitable. As the Chicago Tribune noted last year, authorities declined to say why he wasn't charged much earlier. 2 years after he came to the attention of the ATF, agents organized an undercover sting, buying a Walther 40 caliber pistol from Caldwell on Arms List. While Caldwell was still under investigation, he sold a weapon on Arms List, and months later, the gun somehow arrived in Chicago. When it did, police commander Paul Bauer responded to a call in the loop and caught up with a suspect. In the struggle that followed, Bauer was shot 6 times and killed with the gun. So this just gets kind of darker and darker. And
right.
The spoiler is that Caldwell wasn't the only frequent user of Arms List.
Of course not.
Over the years, the website has become a major destination for firearm buyers and sellers. The site can be used legally, and its terms of use explicitly direct users to follow applicable firearms laws. Critics, however,
We're
say
platform,
the site's
guys.
Operators have taken a hands-off approach, exactly,
right,
to moderating the content. A platform that fuels violence and allows private sellers to bypass getting a federal firearms license. Law enforcement faces legal barriers to policing rogue sellers like Caldwell, but the law also puts Arms List itself out of reach. The same legal protections meant to help the internet flourish have also ensured the guns keep flowing. Quote, to protect the good actors, you have to write a standard that allows people to be pretty terrible actors, too, says Jamie Grimmelman, professor of law at Cornell University. Quote, the challenge is how do you distinguish the good from the terrible actors? I'm going to let you read, anybody who's interested, the rest of this very long read. And put 10 minutes on the clock.
I love that phrasing of like
nasty idea
of like this website can be used legally.
It's like you. It is possible for you to not do that, but you can use it legally.
That's one of the options.
Okay.
Man, I'm of two minds here.
Tell us your minds.
One is gun range misconnections. We just make it a comedy because this is so fucking sad.
Oh, right, right, right. Like you have to go nuclear here.
Yeah,
you have
no, it has to be absurd. The other thing that occurs to me is that you have sort of an ATF officer or someone who is trying to keep guns out of bad actors' hands gets frustrated with the legal shackles that are placed on them that they can't just go and shut the sites down. So they decide to do sort of like a Russian, like a troll operation of just decide to like go on arms list or whatever and like make the most dangerous guns seem really lame and uncool and sort of like change the culture kind of a thing through, you know, funny listings, joke listings, like memes and stuff, but then they get too caught up in it. And it's sort of a story about like how you change opinions on the internet and how, you know, when you, everyone starts out joking and you get so enmeshed in such an echo cycle of the same kinds of people and the same kinds of humor that eventually you come to end up believing the absurd thing.
Right.
So like they start out trying to like replace the guns on arms list with like Pez dispensers and then like slowly Pez dispensers become guns.
Or like this person just becomes a Pez head, you know,
right,
and just falls into the dark end of Pez dispenser culture. I don't know.
Right.
Jared, I'm curious if you have anything better.
You know, so essentially these people are kind of arms dealers, right?
Yes. I mean, but like circa early eBay.
Yeah. So one thing that I was thinking is, you know, while you were reading that and you're listing off kind of the names of these guns, you could have made up things and I wouldn't have known the difference, you know?
They could have made up things and I wouldn't have known the difference.
So you need, there's this culture and this education that comes with that. And there's something that's kind of funny about, like Sarah said, something kind of infiltrating this world. But what if it was kind of someone who was trying to take down these essentially like Craigslist arms dealers, but don't really know enough about that culture to, you know, be realistic.
I think I may have a way to kind of go one step further. Somebody ends up in this place and they put an item up for auction. And they just call it like the Harbinger. They just give it sort of a really ominous sounding name.
Right.
Because they kind of like discover this loophole of like, oh, wait a second, this site is unenforceable. Like everyone is breaking the law here. I'm just going to make a quick buck, put this thing that sounds like an awesome gun for sale, and then like never have to like, you know, send it off to anyone.
Right. I'll get my PayPal deposit.
Yeah. Like,
and probably not allowed to have guns anyway.
I'll make like $100, whatever. And then, you know, he like goes and he makes himself a sandwich and like goes to like work at his job. The next day he comes back and he's like, oh, I wonder how that's doing. And it's up to like $25,000.
Like people are accidental bidding. Fake arms dealer.
Exactly. Yes. but at a certain point, like he's trying to shut it down, but like the site is not allowing him to.
The local news picks it up.
Exactly. And all of a sudden there's like a bid from, you know, like a rogue state. There's like, you know, from like the KGB and, you know, and like he's getting like all these like shadowy figures coming by his house, kind of going, you know, like, we want to know where the, I don't know what accent this is, but like some threatening.
Where did you get the Harbinger?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And he has to put on this persona that's, you know, somebody who's deep into this world, you know, so as these shadowy figures don't do him any harm.
Right. And like suddenly he's getting meetings with like the Department of State and they're kind of like, you have no idea how close we were to war with these people and we would have gotten annihilated. The only thing that stopped them was realizing that we had the Harbinger and that like it was here and that could be used against them. And he's like, it does not exist. Like I did not say what this thing did. And they're all kind of going, exactly. You know, very judicious of you.
Wise. If the public knew what it did.
It's kind of like Let's Be Cops, you know, where they got sucked into that world and they have to pretend to be police officers. It's just, you know, kind of like that, you know.
I didn't see this. What is it?
You know, it's a comedy about people who aren't police officers, but get mistaken for them and have to like kind of pretend that they are and solve a crime. So it's kind of like that, and that these kind of accidental arms dealers.
Right. They kind of quickly end up in these positions where it would kind of be terrible for them to kind of be like, oh, I'm sorry, lady. I'm just dressed up as a cop. I'm not actually a cop because there's someone in danger. So they kind of have to be like, all right, I guess we're doing this.
No one else is around. Right. So.
Stop in the name of the law. And I think that, this person kind of ends up in a similar position of, you know, all of a sudden he's basically Dr. Strangelove. He's the sort of, you know, weapons designer and manufacturer for...
Right. People think that he's Nick Cage in Lord of War.
Yeah, he's kidnapped and brought to these shadowy headquarters of these criminal underworld.
Right. And kind of has to figure out how to talk his way out of these positions. Yeah.
I dig it.
Sounds pretty good.
Do we ever get to know what the Harbinger is?
I have no idea. Like, this is one of these, like, I'm not sure how we could know. Like,
picturing the gun from 12 Ounce Mouse, the terribly animated, very random show from Adult Swim that is 13 guns. In one gun.
It's kind of better not to know, right? Though it's kind of like what's in the briefcase in Pulp Fiction or something like that, you know, like to not see it and have it be, that could be even like the title of the movie, you know?
The Harbinger.
But it's something you never see. Yeah. It's this weapon of...
So how is it listed on the website? Do they have like a photo like of with like a human for scale? And then it's like mosaiced out? And maybe so you just see this like sensor bar of like gunmetal.
Maybe it's just like in a wooden crate. Maybe the image is just a wooden crate with a question mark on it.
Yeah.
Kind of like you want to see the Harbinger? Pay up, brother.
That's right.
Now here's the question of, does he just accidentally stumble and say like the U.S. government really is developing a top secret massive weapon that is called the Harbinger? And he just happens to call it the same thing, or is it just all kind of people getting swept up in the fervor around this kid's nonsensical posting?
I think it could be both, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it can start as people getting swept up in it, and then the third act is that it's a real thing, and
right that's a turn.
Yeah.
You could also lean into the like it what like I guess I wonder how much their value there is to the ambiguity of it, where it's like, at first we think that the government, we're led to believe that the government is claiming that there was actually something being developed called the Harbinger.
Yeah.
But it's just false information. Cause like, you know, it's just,
right. They're trying to stay ahead of the game.
Yeah.
Right.
And the DARPA future gonna of warfare DARPA is not a battlefield. It's information. And so, you know, like, and then by the end of the movie, they're actually developing it in order to catch up and have something. So they've like slapped the name Harbinger onto the, like, you know.
I love that of like they develop a new thing and they're like, we've reproduced the Harbinger. And he's kind of going, how can you reproduce it? It does not exist. It has never been produced. You have reproduced nothing.
He's accidentally pushed warfare to the next level.
Right. Oh my God. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to CNN. We are in day 9 of the Harbinger crisis. As you know, multiple countries point their, you know, weapons at each other. And just kind of like all hanging on the brink of...
And do we sort of find out that there's like this shadowy mastermind who started the initial bidding war on the Harbinger to sort of build up the ante for it? Or is like the message of the movie that like... it can be anything. Like, there's, you know, this will happen at the drop of a dime.
I like both. I kind of want to talk more about this shadowy person because who are they? What are they? What are they?
10 seconds you have left.
Radomir Vootin.
Excellent. Good to know.
And that is time.
All right. All right. I like
I like the place that one got to. That was
nice. Yeah.
It even has a good title. The Harbinger.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Coming this summer.
Yes. The Harbinger.
Oh, man. I'm glad we got away from the actual sad real world version of this. Yeah.
Thank you for navigating that one so skillfully. Sorry for the misery.
It's all good, man.
And thank you all for listening. We'll see you on Thursday for our next episode.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist member, Rena Sarame. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.